Hey, Bills fans, welcome into the Bills Wire podcast. I am your host, Jeremy Uhas. Thank you guys for tuning into this episode. As we are now into the second half of the 2018 Bills season that has been quite abysmal thus far for the team. Matt Barkley potentially starting this week against the Jets. And it's been a rough go, to say the least, for the Buffalo Bills this season with the quarterback situation as it's unfolded, LeSean McCoy not getting going. It's been, and you know this, a real rough season, even just to watch. The offense has been really subpar, and that's being kind to this team. Historic lows on all fronts in a league that's really putting up monstrous numbers. So we are here to talk about that today with The Athletic's Tim Graham. Tim wanted to come on the podcast with me, and we're so grateful that he did. As you know, he's a senior writer for The Athletic Buffalo, and he had previously been with the Buffalo News as a reporter, and he covered the AFC East on ESPN for a short stint as well, covering the Miami Dolphins and also at the Palm Beach Post. So really happy to have Tim Graham join us on this episode of the podcast and get a chance to interview Tim just to get his thoughts on the season and to also kind of pick his brain, see how things are going with him at The Athletic. So I hope you enjoy our conversation with Tim Graham here on the Bills Wire podcast. Joining me now is Tim Graham of The Athletic. Tim, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Jeremy. I've been looking forward to doing this for a while.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I wanted to get you on. Obviously, we'll get to the Bills here in a minute. But just first, kind of the landscape of the Buffalo sports media scene has been really interesting over the past year. A lot of people covering the Bills just with so many passionate fans. I've really appreciated your work at the Athletic with you and Matthew Fairburn covering the Bills. What has that kind of transition been like for you? And, you know, I think everyone's grown accustomed to your in-depth features that you like to write.
Yeah, it's been super rewarding to work for The Athletic. And it was that way at the Buffalo News also. I had a lot of freedom. I had a lot of resources, a lot of time to write the stories that I'm proud of and the Buffalo News was proud of too. Was able to have a lot of latitude. I would come up with an idea and I would be given the green light quite frequently. In fact, probably almost 100% of the time. I'm able to do the same thing at The Athletic. It's been a really rewarding experience getting to work with Matthew Fairburn. He's somebody who was a colleague and kind of a competitor, really, when he was at the Syracuse Post-Standard and writing for their website covering the Bills, but a friend. And so now to be his teammate, and it's been a lot of fun because we come from different generations. I think we feed off each other. We've made each other better. I feel anyway, or I should speak for myself. I feel like he's made me better just in traveling with him and spending a lot more time with him. When we are on the road, we're pretty much together the entire time. So he's gotten to be a pretty close friend of mine, and really my respect for him has grown quite a bit also in terms of from a professional standpoint. So my boss, Lisa Wilson, the former sports editor of the Buffalo News, is my boss again. So that's been great. It's been a joy, and yeah. I hope that it remains that way.
Cool. Jumping into this Bills season, Tim, are you surprised by how it's gone?
Well, yeah. I didn't think they were going to be very good. I thought that they'd be closer to the middle of the pack, and they haven't really shown that. They've shown that they're capable of anything on any given week. We saw that the game in Minneapolis, and it wasn't really a total flash in the pan because you know, they came back and won another game not too long after that. Tennessee is a pretty good team. And to be able to beat Tennessee in such a close fashion and on the last play of the game, Hauschka makes a field goal, that to me signaled that maybe the Bills were going to be able to play like I expected them to before the season began. But what we've seen here over the last four straight games, a maximum of 13 points. In fact, they haven't scored more than 13 points since Minneapolis. I'm looking at the scores right now. You have 0, 13, 13, 5, 6, 9. And a lot of that is attributed to the quarterback situation. And there are all kinds of different striations of that quarterback situation. It's not only Josh Allen being hurt, it's not having a veteran on the quarterback when the season began. It's the decision not to keep A.J. McCarron. You can even go back farther to maybe not competing a little more heartily with the New York Jets to get Josh McCown. And that's who we're going to see the Bills get to play on Sunday. But Josh McCown is a guy that they went after, and I thought would have filled that role perfectly as the mentor slash veteran, maybe as your starter when the season begins, but knows his place and will give way to the rookie when it's time. And that's why the Jets valued him so much. And we could talk about that a little later. But So, yeah, it's been a surprise in how far away they are to a team that would be in the whatever the best team is in the bottom third of the league. It seems like the Bills aren't even close to that, sure. So let alone the middle of the pack.
Yeah, I mean, the defense is playing, pretty good football. It's just been the offense that's really had its struggles. And with that, I think a lot of fans, Tim, are frustrated maybe with a little bit of the philosophy. And, I was only 3-4 years old back when the Bills made the Super Bowls in the early 90s. So I didn't have a ton of firsthand experience watching those teams. But it seemed like with Kelly's K-gun offense that was, revolutionary at the time. It was an air raid attack. It was an offense that was dynamic. And now we're hearing from coaches that have coached the Bills here for the last decade or so. We want to, ground and pound, or we want to work the clock, play in the wind and the snow. And when the Bills were at their best, they really didn't embrace that philosophy. In fact, I think they did the opposite. So just in terms of the philosophy and obviously with losing,
Jeremy, you could even go back to when they were, let's think about the last time they were entertaining to watch.
Sure.
And that's probably when Ryan Fitzpatrick was the quarterback.
Yes.
And even then they threw the ball around a lot, and true, they had great running backs in, or at least, I'm not
competent.
Saying that they were, that they're, the superstars or all pro or future Hall of Famers, but you had a couple of guys who could rush for 1,000 yards in Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller, but a lot of the weaponry or a lot of the ways that they were used had to do with the passing game, getting them in space, screen game. And then Ryan Fitzpatrick was able to go downfield to guys like, and they were overachievers too, which made it even that much more fun to watch these guys like David Nelson and Scott Chandler and Stevie Johnson and Naaman Roosevelt and Donald Jones, and you think about that, how fun that offense was, and they didn't necessarily, they won almost half the games, with the exception of that 2010 season when they were really bad. But those teams were at least fun to watch, and it's because they chucked it around.
And I think that's what just cautions fans, or just gets fans nervous here going forward with a lot of this rhetoric and talk from the head coach, because as you've seen this year too with just the passing around the league, it's not really conducive to where the league is trending. So, how I guess just personally, like, what do you feel about that? Do you think that it's just McDermott maybe speaking to the media just to be more coach speak, and they drafted Josh Allen with that in mind to chuck it all over the field again at some point?
Yeah, everything is really stunted right now because even I think their plan, and this goes back to what I was saying regarding Josh McCown or A.J. McCarron, or if they could have pried Ryan Fitzpatrick away or somebody of that ilk. I think that their intention going into the season was not to have Josh Allen be the number one guy. But it turned into that quickly because Nathan Peterman was awful in the opener. And it was a flashback to the game against the Chargers last year in which Peterman became a national punchline, and it started to build on itself, or I guess implode on itself. That Nathan Peterman couldn't be the starter anymore. So now you're forced to go with Josh Allen, still as he's getting to learn the NFL lifestyle and how he needs to go about his business on a practice-to-practice basis, on a week-to-week basis, learning about his first road game, his first home game. And, there's so much that goes into that from a quarterback standpoint that it would have been valuable for him to learn from somebody who's been doing it for a long time. And so the Bills really backed themselves into that situation. So I don't really know if we can say what the Bills wanted to do with their offense this year. I asked Brian Daboll that question, I believe it was two Mondays ago, in which I said, how much of your playbook that you intended to use this year are you really using? Because as the season goes on, you get more and more masterful of the playbook to the point that you can do things, do pretty much anything in it, add things off of it, put in variations in which you can call a play in a game that maybe you haven't practiced in a few weeks. Because the players are so have absorbed it all. But, you know, Daboll, you know, shook his head and said, when especially with a guy like Derek Anderson, that you get to week to week situation and they are putting plays in there that are less masterful. You know, they're dumbed down, or yeah. He didn't put it in those terms, but you have to run plays that Derek Anderson can interpret just by language alone, or the verbiage that Brian Daboll uses, as opposed to, you know, getting deep into the playbook. So they've been limited all year. They've been limited in the sense that Nathan Peterman was only in his second year with only one start to his credit, right? Or was it mm-hmm. two? Whatever it was when the season began, and then you had a quarterback in Josh Allen who's still learning the NFL, and then you go to a guy who was not playing at all. And who knows, maybe we see Matt Barkley on Sunday. But, you're dealing, Brian Daboll's in a situation where he's just trying to slap something together every week. And it's gotten to the point that I'm not even sure what this offense is supposed to be or what they wanted it to be.
It's definitely ugly to watch on Sundays, especially the last several weeks. Maybe Matt Barkley does come in. I don't know if that's going to go over well. Probably the same issues that Anderson would have, you know, knowing the playbook, hasn't been here that long. What about McCoy, Tim? This is something that you talked about a little bit on your show, you know, with Mike Rodak and the crew over there. But does keeping him make sense, even in hindsight here, as the trade deadline passed?
I think it does for a couple of reasons. You need to be able to – everybody's talking about the salary cap money that the Bills are going to have next year. And what does that mean? That means that they have the ability to sign free agents. Well, a big part of signing a free agent is recruiting. It's not just throwing money at him. A player is, unless you truly want to overspend, unless you want to get into a situation where you're in a bidding war with another team, and that other team maybe has a quarterback who's in his fifth season, has maybe been to a Pro Bowl as an alternate, and has something that's has more of a semblance of an offense versus the Bills. Well, how are you? If you're the Bills, how are you going to recruit? How are you going to sell the team? And I think one of the ways that you can sell the team to an offensive player, like if it's a pass catching tight end or another wide receiver, offensive lineman, it's, hey, how about if you come here and play with LeSean McCoy and Josh Allen? This guy's got a rocket arm. We think he's our future quarterback. Wouldn't you like to block for a potential Hall of Fame running back as he starts knocking down these milestones? And so the Bills need something to draw these free agents to. You're not going to be able to cobble an offense together from virtually scratch. And so I think that LeSean McCoy helps in that regard. And I think, too, for the second part, that I think it makes sense to keep LeSean McCoy, or at least to people I've spoken to and people who have no reason to lie to me, is they don't believe that he's lost a step. And it's something that I was speaking to Eric Wood about earlier today, in fact, and he agrees with that. He thinks that LeSean McCoy still has a lot left in the tank. And really what this is coming down to is the fact that the Bills are getting down a couple of scores early in games, and rather than picking up 4 yards, 5 yards that are there, or even 2 or 3 yards, sometimes it can be a good carry in the NFL, depending on, you know, what's presented to you by the defense, is that LeSean McCoy is trying to hit a home run on every carry.
Yeah.
And it's because the Bills are down. LeSean McCoy isn't going to be guaranteed the 25 to 30 carries like he was getting in the games last year, because the games are closer and you can take that into the third and fourth quarter, use a little bit more of a ball control offense. The Bills are in like a 2-minute offense in the second quarter in a lot of these games. And so LeSean McCoy's thinking, well, before this game gets too much older, this might be my last carry right here. And so he's dancing around. He's not hitting the hole. He's trying to turn what should be an easy 3 or 4 yard gain into a 30 yard gain. And so that's an issue. So it's really hard to say in looking at LeSean McCoy, yes, 24 carries, 24 yards over his last three games, and say, well, 1 yard a carry, he's 30 years old, he's washed up. But people who are around him, who see him at practice, who are watching him from afar, even Eric Wood's not with the team anymore, he's watching the team at least on television, he still says, and other people still say that they still see the LeSean McCoy that was on the Bills last year and is capable of doing all those things. But the situations that the Bills are in are kind of cutting him off at the knee.
Well, I really like
your point. He's doing it himself. And he's doing, right. I mean, like, also, you know, Chris Ivory is not doing that. So Chris Ivory is getting the 3 yard carry.
Yes.
And then he gets the 6 yard carry. And so his average looks a lot better. And well, it is a lot better than LeSean McCoy's because he's hitting the hole and he's taking whatever is given, whereas LeSean McCoy is trying to take what isn't being given. And it's because he's a superstar and that's the way he thinks. And that's, you know, all things being equal, that's probably the type of mentality you want. Unfortunately for the Bills, nothing on the offense this year is equal.
Yeah. Well, I really like your point about keeping him next year is in terms of your credibility, right? The guy that's going to be on the team that you would want to come play for and with. And not only can the front office sell LeSean McCoy, but LeSean McCoy has friends throughout the league that he can himself sell the Bills to. And I think that's a really good point, something that I had forgotten, and I think that would be a tremendous asset to have in recruiting free agents next year. So that is a good point, Tim. I'm glad you brought that up. How about this offensive line? We were talking about just, you know, Ivory hitting the hole when he can and getting his yards on first and second down. But it seems to me that the line is struggling. You have Wyatt Teller going in last week. Obviously, Eric Wood and Richie Incognito have been greatly missed here. We thought that the new blocking scheme, the more of the man blocking scheme as opposed to Rick Dennison's zone scheme, would benefit the Bills this year, and it just hasn't happened.
Again, I think that it's one of those deals where everything generally goes through the quarterback when you're talking about an offense. But with the Bills, I keep finding myself on pretty much any question asked about why something's not working. My answers always seem to go through the wide receivers and also the tight end. You know, Charles Clay has been hobbled. He's ever since the Bills signed him, he has been dealing with knee injuries, and he's out this week with the hamstring. But targets, I mean, there's nobody for the Bills to throw it to. There's no one that the defense respects. And so what happens is defenses are putting extra men in the box. They can go ahead and put defenders one-on-one with any receiver that the Bills want to put out there. It doesn't matter. They're going to take away the run first, make you throw the ball. And then in those situations, because Josh Allen takes a little longer to get rid of the ball, he's a rookie processing the game, because Nathan Peterman has not much more experience than Josh Allen, also can take a little longer to get rid of the ball. You get sack situations. So I do think that the biggest problem on the Bills is at wide receiver. And with better wide receivers, I think the offensive line would look a lot better. I think the quarterback would look a bit better. So, you know, you're looking at a situation with the Bills where Zay Jones, who I think just based on our sense of Zay Jones this season, he disappears for long periods of time, maybe not necessarily his fault, but you can go large chunks of games without even remembering that Zay Jones is on the team, and he leads them with 29 catches for 299 yards. After that, it's LeSean McCoy at 23 catches, second on the Bills. Kelvin Benjamin checks in with 20 catches. And then you don't have another receiver until Andre Holmes on the list at 11 catches. Now, Andre Holmes is here to play special teams. And when he's your number three wide receiver, that should emphasize exactly how bad things are at that position. So teams have zero respect for the Bills receivers. They don't pay him any mind. And so that really, that hurts the offensive line. And then you get into these situations where, no, go ahead, Jeremy.
No, Tim, is that just an oversight by being here in the offseason thinking that Kelvin Benjamin was going to produce more, that Charles Clay would stay healthy, or were they just thinking that they were content with those guys coming into 2018?
Yeah, and Jeremy Curley was there. I think that they looked at what they had. It was a thin group. It was very thin, even heading into training camp, and it's gotten thinner. I do think it was probably part miscalculation. Perhaps that position is just one that's viewed as being too overpaid, and we don't want to waste our money there in a season in which we expect to be on the rebuild. And those aren't things that you say heading into the season. And we're seeing Sean McDermott, you know, talk about the reality of the situation. We knew what we were. He's starting to say things like that now. That's because they're 2-7. You don't say those things in training camp or, you know, first month of the season, because, you know, you don't want, you're going to lose the locker room that way. But still, I think that there was a, I can't say that I knew precisely how they mapped this out in terms of their roster. It certainly seems like a short-sighted view, especially when you're investing so much in a quarterback, not only in money, but in time and, you know, the draft picks you trade up to get Josh Allen. You want him to have the best, you know, the best possible offensive mates out there on the field with him. But I think that also underscores how the Bills didn't probably expect Josh Allen to be playing this year anyway, that it would be A.J. McCarron's job, and that's before A.J. McCarron has the injury in training or in preseason, or having too much faith in Nathan Peterman that, okay, if McCarron doesn't work out, then Peterman will be fine to take over that role. And he won the job in training camp. I don't want to diminish that. But, yeah, I guess, Jeremy, it's my long-winded way of saying that I think that they were
slightly miscalculated that.
Yeah,
that position.
They did not handle it properly. And now, again, you need to go through case by case basis and say, all right, well, who would they have signed? And maybe that receiver wasn't available at that price that the Bills were willing to pay. And so sometimes free agency can get away from you. And that's exactly what happened with how the Bills ended up with A.J. McCarron. And at the time, it seemed like a great bargain. But, you know, A.J. McCarron, of course, gets traded at the end of the preseason. But, yeah, they didn't get any of the quarterbacks that they wanted because they weren't willing to – they had a price that they were willing to pay, and they ended up with A.J. McCarron. And so I don't think it's a stretch to think that, okay, they probably had some receivers in mind and just couldn't get them.
Yeah. I mean, they tried to bring in Coleman, but that just didn't work out. So I think they did try to effort to bolster that. They have brought in Pryor here in the last couple of weeks, so we'll see what he can do down the stretch.
They have tried, but but it hasn't the fact that it hasn't worked out, I guess you can say they're trying well enough. They haven't, they need to do better, obviously.
Yeah,
and they need to show that they can judge wide receivers and get some, or maybe they're just going to have to overpay. But at some point, they need to bring in a lot of help at that position.
With the offense struggling as much as it has, I know that you've talked to Kyle Williams here in the last couple of days. And just the defense in general playing pretty well, I think, overall. Are they getting frustrated? And can you kind of tell, even underneath the comments, that they're putting forth, you know, good efforts against the Patriots, holding them to field goals, and just playing pretty well and not getting rewarded?
You know, I talk to these guys a lot, and when I say off the record, that doesn't mean secret stuff. I mean, when I say off the record comment, it's something that you're, you know, you just may be two guys talking, you know, how's your family doing? You know, the recorder's not on. And you can get a sense of guys from body language, maybe even facial expressions. You just talk about, hey, how you holding up, you know, stuff like that. And I'll say that in talking to the defensive players, they aren't nearly as frustrated as the offensive players are. It's the offensive players who know that they're wasting good defensive opportunities out there. They feel guilty. Those guys know that the defense is holding up its end of the bargain on most cases. And that they're just not putting up enough points to make it worthwhile. And in some cases, giving up points, you know, letting the defense score. So letting the opposing defense score is what I mean by that. So, yeah, I think that you have a lot of good soldiers on that defensive side of the ball, people who've been around the block a few times, Lorenzo Alexander, of course, who know that if they want their efforts and their talents to start paying off, that they need to keep the offense engaged. They can't start ragging on the and it's not. And this is where I enjoy talking to these guys and talking about it, too, from a sports psychology standpoint. And a lot of fans out there may be saying, well, they're that's disingenuous, or they're faking it, or it's not. These guys are wired that way. They're wired to not to have an all for one mentality. That's how they get here. That's how they stick in the league for a long time. It's how they get to positions of leadership, like being the captain or union representative on your team, or in Lorenzo Alexander's case, a captain and a union executive on the players' board. And it's because they push that type of stuff out and the negativity, and they just have to. You know, these guys, much like anybody else, they have to find reasons to go to work every day, and so. The defense is putting on, I'm not just saying they're putting on a happy face. I think that there's enough leadership on that side of the ball that they show up and they genuinely do feel like, hey, our offense is going to start picking it up at some point. Or if they're not, we just need to keep maintaining and help them out here. So I haven't sensed any frustration toward the offense. Frustration in that they're not winning, yes. But not in the sense of them making any blame. And, you know, other veterans that are on that team, guys who've been around, you know, Jerry Hughes and, you know, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde are on the younger side, but they're still, you know, leaders, guys. They played on bad football teams in the past. You know, so it's interesting dynamic on the defense. And I'm glad you asked that, because I do think that it's more the offensive guys feeling guilty than it is the defensive guys getting pissed off or feeling like the offense is just not doing what they're supposed to do.
I'm glad you brought up Lorenzo as well, because he's kind of turned out to be a great story in himself, just being a special teamer for such a long time and really finding a leadership role with the team, but also having another Pro Bowl type year. I think you would agree probably as well. He's been, you know, one of their better defenders this year, and kind of leading the charge for a young linebacking group with obviously Tremaine Edmonds coming in. So just talk about Zoe a little bit, because I think he would be a fun interview, a good person in the locker room. Like you said, wired the right way. I think this team would be really lost even on defense if someone like him weren't in position to lead that defense.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, he's one of those guys who'll never turn down an interview. So he's very media friendly, but I don't want that to be any kind of bias. You know, another guy who I think is having a fantastic season is Matt Milano, and he's a mute. Right. So you don't have to talk to me for me to talk you up. And Tremaine Edmonds is another guy who's pretty soft spoken, and he's having a great season too. But yeah, Lorenzo Alexander he has 4.5 sacks. 5 tackles for losses. He's getting after the quarterback. He's making the quarterback rush his throws. He has 5 pass defenses. He's breaking up passes. A forced fumble. He's got a recovery. And at his age, he's been super impressive. And he's one of those guys that keeps everybody rallied. You know, there was Matt Fairburn wrote about it, so I'm not telling any secrets. But in Indianapolis, you know, there was in the locker room a situation in which a reporter was asking Jerry Hughes some questions about just what we were talking about a couple of minutes ago, the offense and frustration. Are there frustrations that the offense isn't holding up its end of the deal? And Lorenzo Alexander jumped in the middle of that interview and said, "You will not divide us. You know, stop asking, you know, go ask those questions somewhere else. You're not going to get it here." That was very out of character for Lorenzo Alexander, because he is so media friendly. He is always has a smile on his face. You can ask him the tough questions and he won't take it personally. But that showed right there that the guy, you know, he's a defender of his guys. And I think that you are looking at another potential Pro Bowl season, especially once you get to one, the guys have a tendency, especially the coaches and the players, have a tendency to keep voting for you. So in games he's played, he's been a difference maker. I should say, I don't want to phrase it like that. It's like he's been hurt. He has played every game. So he, yep. he is a difference maker. And especially in the Bills' two wins, he's been a difference maker. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of his and what he brings to the table. He's classic underdog story. One-man gang, everything from the nickname, the guy played fullback, the guy can, you know, it's, he just does it all, and he's ageless. He's like the, you know, he's like the Fred Jackson of defense, isn't he? I mean, for Bills fans, I mean, he's exactly what, you know, that gets you pumped up, that gives you a reason to be proud to be a Bills fan when there aren't a lot of them.
Right. What do you expect this weekend? You know, you have the Jets. It would have been great if Darnold were suiting up and Allen kind of going at it. But just kind of a look toward the second half of the season, Tim, and specifically this weekend. What are you looking forward to seeing in this matchup?
Not much. I think it'll be a low-scoring game. You know, Las Vegas thinks it's going to be a low-scoring game, too. In talking with some guys in the locker room this week, in fact, I was in there when it was reported that McCown was going to start because Darnold has the injury, and a lot of the guys in the Bills were kind of muttering that makes him harder to beat because McCown is a steady veteran. He doesn't throw interceptions, led the league in interception percentage a few years ago and was second another year. He's not going to light him up, but he's also not going to make the mistake that somebody like Darnold would, the rookie mistakes, the dumb interception, the fumble. You know, we've seen Darnold do that all season. So him not being in the game does take out some of the interest for me, and I think it also takes away a chance for the Bills to win that game and for that defense to step up and maybe get a pick six or, you know, those game-changing type turnovers. That's not to say that Josh McCown won't do it, but that they can't make Josh McCown do some things stupid, or that he's, you know, or maybe he's 39 years old. Maybe just the fact that he's 39 years old and has a career record of like 32-50 as a starter. So, I think he does give him a better chance to win. It'll be interesting to see what the Bills do at quarterback. You know, does Matt Barkley get a chance? Is Josh Allen healthy enough to play? If not, I mean, what the Peterman story to me is fascinating. As I wrote last week, I'm rooting for the guy because it's not his fault that he's in this situation. He's a fifth-round pick. He's on a rookie contract making the same amount of money as Reed Ferguson, the long snapper. He's not stealing anybody's job. He didn't get in the way of the Bills addressing quarterback in the offseason. It's not like E.J. Manuel where, okay, we have our guy, now we're not allowed to draft anybody. Nope, they went out and they drafted Josh Allen and they signed A.J. McCarron. And Nathan Peterman has not prevented the Bills from doing anything that they normally would have. So if he has to play, I hope he has a great game because I think it would be a fantastic story and deserved. I think I'd feel genuinely good for the guy after everything, all the abuse he's taken.
Yeah,
so I guess that's what I'm looking for, Jeremy. I guess that's it. I'd like to see Nathan Peterman play and do well, and if Matt Barkley happens to play, if Josh Allen plays, that's always good. You know, it's good to see his development. Have him get some more live reps. It's good for his development. But the Matt Barkley could be fascinating too. I mean, who knows? We could be looking at a total wreck. I don't know.
Yeah, four starters here before you know. Thanksgiving for the Bills at quarterback potentially. Pretty wild. Before I let you go, Tim, I liked your latest article, and it's kind of relevant today as we're recording. Dez Bryant goes down for the Saints after being signed to a free agency deal. But you talked about, you know, injury rides from a game that, quote, doesn't stop for anybody. I thought it was a really good read. Appreciated kind of that look into where it said 100% really of the players in the league will suffer some type of injury in their career. It's just how much pain tolerance they can you know, sustain and kind of overcome. But
well, 100%, Jeremy, I mean, the stat is really 100% every season. Now, that's not to say that everybody's going to get hurt, but on average, This was shocking to me. I interviewed the NFLPA's director, Tom Mayer, and he shared with me some of the data that the NFL and NFLPA use. And on average, over the past three seasons, there are 4,569 injuries. And 2,076 of those result in missed time from practice or games. Okay, so even take the minor stuff out of it. Let's just look at only the injuries that cause you to miss time from practice or games. 2,076 injuries. On average, 1,994 players have played in a game over the past 3 years. So there are more injuries than players. Now, sure, some players may get hurt three, four times, but you're talking about more injuries than there are actual personnel. So that's 100% rate. Yeah, that's scary stuff. And a lot of those guys are going to be carted off. And what I wanted to do was, it really struck me after Earl Thomas gave the Seahawks the middle finger as he was being ridden off. it just let me think of that, the process of the cart and what goes into it. And it's the choreography that's involved in the cart and what it must be like for that player. Whether it's Earl Thomas expressing himself the way he did, or somebody like Ricardo Laquette giving the thumbs up after a neck injury, you know, that's player's career. Well, his day is almost certainly over. Aaron Rodgers defied that earlier this season when he was carted off and returned to the game, but you usually don't see that. Usually when the cart comes out, that means your day's over. It also, I think, a good, maybe even usually means your season is over. And then
potentially your career. Yeah,
so a lot is washing over the player in that moment as he's on the back of that cart being taken to the tunnel, to the x-ray room, to the ambulance, wherever. And I just wanted to look inside that as to how trainers handle it, how players handle it, what really goes into a part of the game that I think a lot of people take for granted. And justifiably, I understand. You go to commercial. You know, the network doesn't show it. You know, it's time. Mm-hmm. Here comes the cart. Well, it's time for us to go to commercial. Go grab a beer. Go take a leak. Do whatever you got to do. And when we come back, this cart's going to be gone, and the game and the ref will be blowing the whistle. And we don't want to think about that stuff either. You don't want to think about the. You want to just watch the game. You don't want to think about a guy's career coming to an end. So.
But it's again, so symbolic for the players, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that's interesting.
Absolutely. So I wanted to take a look at – that's what I like to do is getting into a part of the game that we either overlook or take for granted and just exploring it in such depth that maybe the next time you watch the game, you think about it differently.
Cool. Well, Tim, this was really fun. Hopefully we can do this again down the line.
Anytime.
Continued success, you know, at the Athletic. Wish you and Matthew and even the Sabres guys, too, all the best as you guys keep doing a great job covering Buffalo sports. Appreciate you joining me.
I'm grateful.
All right. Thanks, Tim.